quick change of tape, and I'm back. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz still, and the phone number is still 96.3 is the call number. The phone number is 427-3772. Lots of good interviews tonight. We caught yet another member of the homeless working group on the fly as he was heading home. Here's an interview with Michael Schmidt.
Homeless Working Group activist and Area Chamber of Commerce CEO, Michael Schmidt. Hi, Michael.
Hello, Robert. How are you this evening?
I'm good. And you are rushing across town through traffic, but you're going to give us a moment, hopefully, to tell us what you think of the latest city council election results.
I am really pleased. I think my sense from the business community is, for the most part, they're very pleased. I think we've elected a good group of folks that I think are going to offer a little more balance to the city council, and at least Emily Riley, who is the top vote getter at, I think, 15.9% of the total vote cast, is a business person, understands what it means to try to make payroll. We're very favorable to Mark Premack to start with, and Scott Kennedy, obviously bringing him back, getting some little longevity on the council. And then Ed Porter, I think, is a good balance to the council as well. So I think, for at least my perspective and what I'm hearing from the business community, we're all pretty well pleased with it.
Are you speaking as a member of the homeless working group as well?
Yes. Well, I don't know. I can only speak as one person, member of the homeless working group. But at least from my perspective, I think we've got folks that we should be able to dialogue with. If I remember right, in the meetings we had with most of them, they were in favor of repealing the sleeping portion of the camping ban. I think Emily Roddy was a little soft on it, as I recall now. Actually,
Kennedy and Premack were both against repealing the sleeping ban portion.
You're right. Reminded me. Good thinking. So,
whereas Ed Porter, I think, was more amenable to it, but he wasn't. He was kind of. He wouldn't say when or how.
Yeah. Well, I think we got some folks we can work with and try to educate and persuade on this issue.
I know that you've been working, also concerned about the Dolphin Lee tenants. Do you have any thoughts on what's happening with them? I know that the City Council voted originally on October 10th to purchase the Dolphin apartments without the guarantees that people currently living there would be allowed to return if the place was demolished, or even allowed to continue tenancy once the Mercy Charities Housing takes over the management. Then we learned on October 31st that the City Council was doing kind of a backflip and deciding to simply turn over $1.5 million to Mercy Charities in a low-income loan. I guess it was going to be a low-interest loan or a no-interest loan. It would be
no interest, no payments.
Right.
One of those myself.
Right. That sounds like a good deal. Mercy Charities would simply buy the whole thing outright. Have you got any thoughts on that? I know you spoke at City Council about it.
Well, I definitely believe that in just the civil rights issue, the human rights side of this, if we have residents who have been there and living there, they have and should be guaranteed the right of return, or at least the right of a comparable, affordable housing in the neighborhood. It does concern me with what happened between October 10th and then the latest flip-flop with these guys. I've been trying to get a hold of Seal and getting some further clarification on what's going on. You were nice enough to bring you by some documents, which I hope to begin to take and study over the weekend. I think, you know, it does concern me that we've got folks out here that on one breath say they're trying to help the poor, and on the other breath they seem not to be concerned the fact that they could put maybe as many as 50 to 100 of these people out in the streets as homeless, which we don't need any more homeless on our streets already.
What about the county? I know that you've been focusing a lot recently in the last couple months on getting the county to open up safe sleeping places like Emmeline Street at night, or the county parking lot at night, or just giving a list of county properties, getting the sheriff to release information on the number of assaults against the homeless in the last few years and any number of people convicted for those assaults or arrested. How are you doing on that score?
Well, I feel like I'm embarrassed because I'm not getting anywhere with these folks. It seems like you're talking to a revolving door. You talk to the sheriff's department, they say contact the DA's office. You contact the DA's office, they say contact the sheriff's office. We've gotten nowhere with Marty Wormat on this issue. Jan Butts is set over her dead body, and she's concerned that on the Emmeline Center that we're going to have to rally the troops on our side, as we had originally talked about at the homeless working group. David Silver apparently has some contacts with the neighborhood associations. I think we need to move forward to educate those folks to get their concerns out on the table and see what we can do to alleviate their concerns about having homeless people. It does concern me. I talked to Paul Brendel today with CAB about the fact that the homeless study that was done, the Census 2000 study results that were done by Applied Research, Applied Scientific Research, whatever that group was named, they're not going anywhere with it either. They're trying to bury it in the continuum of care, which actually is a pretty much a non-functional group, as I'm being led to believe. So it does concern me that we've got another winter. Now, tonight it's colder than heck, going into another winter, and we have not been able to resolve this issue, not be able to even come up with some interim solutions from people who say they really want to try to address the issue.
Now, one of the resolutions which passed in the midsummer in the June 28th midnight 1 a.m. session that killed the Safe Sleeping Zones on motion of Catherine Byers was a resolution by Christopher Crone that requested Ken Cole, the Homeless Services Center, to poll and research businesses and churches and other private people to find possible vehicular and possibly non-vehicular sleeping spots on private property. You're a man who has some connections with the Chamber of Commerce. In fact, your name is synonymous with the Chamber of Commerce. How likely is it that the Chamber of Commerce, some of the merchants there, might be interested in allowing this to happen, to have two vehicles per business parking lot, maybe three per church parking lot? I know you're not that connected with the churches, perhaps, but you probably are in some respects, more so than me. Is that an avenue that you think it could be taken? And are you aware, for example, that when we contacted Ken Cole last week, he had not been informed that the City Council made this and passed this resolution on June 28th?
And I would certainly be willing to work with Ken and to try to mobilize those folks in the business community. I know that when we first got involved with this issue, I know that when I first got involved with this issue from a Chamber of Commerce, and the Chamber voted by its board to support safe sleeping zones, that I had probably up to 100 different individuals representing a number of businesses who said they were very much supportive of what we're doing. I think having a more concentrated effort between Ken and myself and getting the word out that we're needing X number of places for homeless people and would you be willing to sign up, I certainly would be willing to move that issue forward. I wasn't even aware of that resolution. It's probably a surprise to me as it is to Ken Cole. So, and I haven't heard anything from Ken, so if he's willing to work with me on it, I'm willing to try to move something forward on that issue as well.
Finally, the ever present specter of rent control. Some say rent stabilization, some say rent reduction. You yourself have been concerned about commercial raises in the rent. Would you see would you see this as a possibility that finally some businesses in the Chamber of Commerce are, and I'm not speaking for them at all, but would they be willing to consider that as a real possibility, either commercially or residentially? And what are your personal thoughts on that?
Well, as far as business community, at least the sense I've gotten since this issue has been around, has been at least raised in the last few months, has been pretty negative on the idea of rent control. I personally feel that in doing my own research, looking at the state of New Jersey, for example, which is probably one of the better states that has a history of rent control in a lot of communities, what we've learned is that what it tends to do is to slow down the rate of increase is about the only positive thing out of it. And it also tends to diminish, you know, about a third of the properties tend to get in further disrepair because of lazy landlords who would rather do nothing than to try to go through a process in order to improve their property. I would like to see, you know, if we were in a water crisis, remember when we had the water shortage, if you needed more water, you went before the Water Review Board, made your case, and you either got a greater allocation or you were told no. And my personal belief is that we probably, given the escalation of rent in this place, especially, we've seen the rent on where we live go from $1,100 to $1,600 or $1,700 a month in less than 3 years. So, you know, I'm as much a victim of this stuff as anybody else. I would like to see some type of rent review process implemented. And we can call that rent control, whatever you want to say. But I think we're getting at a point in this county where we need to address this issue in a more constructive manner. And rent controls or rent review, something needs to be done. Oddly enough, one of the meetings I'm going to tomorrow is Gary Patton. Apparently is looking at affordable housing as part of the county's cluster study, which is looking at a number of things in the work and education field, which has also included housing. And I'm anxious to see what Gary has to say, because I'm being led to believe by those who have talked with him that he's very concerned because he didn't intend for this to become a county of millionaires when he originally presented some of his no-growth and slow-growth policies, but that's exactly what's happened. And I'm anxious to see what he has to say about creating more affordable housing in Santa Cruz County. And, of course, if we can create more affordable housing, we should be able to create more housing for folks who really need it from all ends of the continuum.
We talked earlier with rent control activist Bob LaMonica on the issue of rent control. November 12th is the anniversary of the police shooting of Happy John Dine, the developmentally disabled man who police claim they found with a toy gun in a case that was kind of wrapped up 3 hours later, although every non-police witness said that they did not see Dine with anything in his hand. They did not see him in a combat stance. They did not see him pointing a replica weapon or a realistic-looking toy gun at the police. There was no independent investigation of this issue, and there has been none. And on Sunday between 4 and 6, there will be a memorial for Happy John Dine downtown in front of the Del Mar. Any thoughts on this situation and on the need for maybe a review, an automatic review of any police action that results in lethal or serious force?
Well, I am definitely in favor, personally, of any time someone is killed in any kind of action, be it police or otherwise, that there be a full public disclosure, a full public review of this. I think having a community as activist-oriented as we are, where there's questions like this that are out on the table that have not been resolved, doesn't do anybody any good and doesn't serve our community well either. I definitely believe that a lot of these processes, which seem to be more behind closed doors, need to be opened up so that folks and testimony can be taken in a more public fashion, and then a determination made with an open-door policy instead of a closed-door policy, which seems to be what we see happening here in some cases.
Printing started.
Go ahead. That's my computer.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here. Go ahead.
Okay, that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Well, we've been talking to Michael Schmidt, activist, CEO, and apparently crosstown driver. Anything you want to conclude with, Michael?
Well, one of these days we might get this highway wiped, and since my wife and I have been carpooling for 15 years, we would probably already be home by now.
I see. Well, if you were homeless, you'd be home by now. Think of that.
No kidding. I probably would be home, right? I'd be living in my car.
Right. Of course, that would be illegal in Santa Cruz.
Unfortunately.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Okay. Keep up good work, and glad to be able to be on your show.
And that was Michael Schmidt, CEO of the Area Chamber of Commerce, as well as coordinator, or certainly co-coordinator, of the Homeless Working Group, which meets, it's been moving its meeting times around. We were meeting on Friday afternoon. Michael has not been able to meet with us on those times, so we've kind of moved our meeting. We were going to meet tomorrow morning at 7 in the morning, but that one got bumped. The next meeting of the Homeless Working Group is, for all you early birds, 7:30 on Monday morning. Also be advised, Monday evening is the time for meeting for the Citizens Police Review Board. That's the Civilian Police Review Board group that gives Chief Belcher the support he so badly needs to keep everything rolling right along. That's at 5:30 at City Hall, and there should be some folks there. I believe Bob LaMonica said he was coming to talk about the Happy John Dine case, which is, I want to remind you, the subject of a memorial Sunday. Almost seems like tomorrow, since I'll be doing my next show on Sunday. It'll be Sunday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon from 4 to 6. We intend to be in front of the Del Mar Theater. Rain or shine, bring your rubber boots and your umbrellas if you're anticipating a wet weather, as I am. Candles, signs, sidewalk chalk to write on the sidewalk. Bring your friends. Bring the names of any stories you may have about people who have suffered from police violence or abuse in Santa Cruz. We're going to start looking at real proposals for reform in the weeks ahead for radical changes in the police department that will really make us a community, make a community situation, a community organization of the police department. We don't expect the city council to welcome our changes. We are inviting city council members to come to this Happy John Dine Memorial and to speak at it if they wish. We are inviting activists to come. We are inviting you to come. Again, 4 o'clock on Sunday, 3 days from today. I guess today is the 9th. I think it'll be the 12th, November 12th, 2000, down at Pacific Avenue, right across from Logos Bookstore in front of the Del Mar Theater. around 6. We will walk to where Happy John was shot, corner of Front and Soquel at the bus stop there across from the New Leaf Market. If it's raining too hard, we'll then go to City Council and do what needs to be done there. Maybe we'll take up residence in the council chambers. After all, they haven't got a homeless shelter. They didn't get their little Proposition U voted, and they don't seem to be willing to decriminalize sleeping in vehicles or outside. So something needs to be done. What I'm going to do now, as the lumbering but knowledgeable form of Uncle Dennis approaches the mic in the studio, is play a bit of an interview with Linda LeMaster on fingerprinting for welfare, which is a serious situation that's arising, another indication of the police state as it extends its tentacles to encircle all of us. We're not going to be able to finish that tape. We'll begin it, and we'll probably continue it on Sunday at 11 o'clock when this show resumes. I also want to remind you there is a City Council study session happening at this time down at City Hall, 7:30 is when it began. There's also a capital punishment Candle of Hope organizing session going on at Loudoun Nelson Center until 9. And then there's us. So if you're not going to go to those events, listen to us and stay tuned for Uncle Dennis with his Earth First show, show that rivals mine in the density of information presented. And tune in again for another edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides on Sunday at 11 o'clock when we will return. Call between times in case you have information or concerns, 423-4833.
Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. You've been involved in concerns about police abuse. You've worked with Welfare Parents Support Group. You've run for City Council. And you've worked on the SCAN Housing and Homelessness Committee, among other things. But actually, what we came to talk to you about was the fingerprinting situation for welfare recipients. Last night, while SCAN was having its general meeting, you were also having a meeting, I guess, which at which you were a speaker.
Yeah, it was a very effective panel. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom often has these educational forums. And last night it was about the indignity of requiring fingerprinting in order for individuals or heads of families to apply for food stamps, which California is one of 7 states, I believe, that's doing this already. And next year, in about a year, the Food Stamp Act has to be reenacted by Congress. So there might be some point to trying to rehumanize the process, or at least deal with that one dehumanizing aspect, the fingerprinting. They fingerprinted me here in the county, so I got to speak on this panel as like someone who has to depend on that system. The other speakers were Willie Elliot McGray, I think that's his last name, from statewide coalitions about hunger, and Donna Blitzer from Sam Farr's office, who talked a little bit about what background she could find about what Congress or the federal government did or didn't require in terms of these laws, like California's fingerprint law.
Farr a supporter of this law?
Donna said Farr was shocked when he found out how pervasive some of the state's programs are at being demeaning like this. So it seemed we were led to believe that he would help if there's a local movement of people who want to change this legislation.
How long has the law been on the books?
It's less than a year old, and it apparently cost $60 million to create this itinerant fingerprint taker who goes from county to county or region to region. And the fourth speaker was Paul Brundell, who brought some interesting other things into the conversation. Apparently he's a foreman of the federal grand jury. So he put some legal issues on the table, like the fact that now in your email system, signatures don't have to be real. You know, the law has changed in terms of, or is in the process of changing in terms of what constitutes your signed or sworn word. And he brought in some other aspects of electronic identity theft that were interesting in the face of what we're talking about here are people who are extremely poor. You're not eligible for food stamps if you have any kind of subsistence income, usually, or if you can get them, they're very few. And meanwhile, tens of thousands of people in our state who are eligible for food stamps either don't know or are already, without the fingerprinting, afraid to apply for them, and so are hungry.
Let me ask you this. How many people would you estimate in this county get food stamps?
Gosh, I don't have a number for you.
Hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands?
Well, in 96, there were 2,000 food stamp families.
Family average of four, let's say? Or?
There's no way to guess how many people. The information wasn't...
Racial stats, like are these mostly Hispanic people, mostly white?
In our county, they're mostly white. There are a lot of families, mostly in the Watsonville area, who are eligible for food stamps and get them. Some of these families get only food stamps, even though they might also be eligible for Medi-Cal or even a cash grant, but they only apply for the food stamps.
How many food stamps does an average family get? I mean, how far will food stamps get you with a family of four, let's say?
You know, there's not an honest way to answer that question, Robert. If it depends on all the different things about your income, which for many people changes from day to day or month to month. But I could tell you about my household. I have one person, my son, who's eligible for food stamps. I get a different kind of income, and by these government helping systems, I'm considered one household, and my son is considered another household. Our rent is reasonable because we have a Section 8 subsidy. So by having our rent go down, it makes our food stamps go down.
So food stamps are tied to rent?
No, food stamps are issued based on what your income is. But if you're in this sort of realm between what they legally call very low income and low income, any change you make, any other new money you might get, say I did some child care or dog sitting and I got a little money and I reported it, then they reduce my food stamps. It's not exactly dollar for dollar, but it's essentially or generally you lose in food spending dollars whatever you made in real dollars.
Right, so it's either tampons or food stamps.
Yeah, the food pantry that we built when I was with We Listen, our welfare parent support group, it tries real hard to work around the limitations that we know are in what the food stamp system allows to be paid for. But what I learned at this panel, Robert, that I found most fascinating is that they anticipate, as far as people who are eligible for food stamps, that means they're hungry already. They expect that there's about 300 cases altogether of food stamp-related welfare fraud in the state of California.
Out of how many cases generally? Are we talking tens of thousands of people who receive food stamps? Is this, in other words, it's less than 0.1%?
Yeah, it's less than a percent. It's obscene. It's just...
And, of course, the whole rationale for this fingerprinting is not because they want to do artistic depictions of people's fingerprints, but because they want to put you in a criminal roster with the intent of intimidating or preventing misuse of food stamps.
Yeah, it was interesting that Donna Blitzer was saying that these impediments they create to make you not feel good about getting stamps are contradictory to the intent of Congress in creating the food stamps.
Can you explain that?
Well, you're going to have to wait until Sunday morning to hear the rest of that interview on Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Robert's powering down right now